call the Education Finance Committee to order. We do have a quorum, so see Representative Wills, if you had had a chance to review the minutes, if you would find that they're meeting your standards and move approval.
She'll look.
And she will look. I know she will.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did review them, actually, already, and I approve the minutes.
All right. There's been a motion to approve the minutes. Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. Thank you very much, motion. Representative Wills. All right. And so today's topic is on school trust lands and the permanent school fund. But before we got to that, and I don't see Representative Anzels, we'll share when he gets here. But at one of our previous hearings, he had asked for information on referendum revenue sorted by district from most to least. And so our very able nonpartisan staff has put that together. So in all of your packets today, and I think it's in the back, or at least it was in the back of mine, there is a chart that has that information. So if anybody doesn't have it, you know, let us know and we'll make sure that we get it to you. But that was one of the things that was requested, and we try to make sure we get that to you as quickly as possible. So, and I see Representative Marquardt, were you needing that information yet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll get that to you. All right. And so with that, we will go ahead and turn to today's topic. And we have a number of testifiers here today, but I think we wanted to lead off with Representative O'Driscoll, who is very active in the school trust and permanent school fund topic in the last legislative session and helped work on legislation that was successfully passed. And if you'd suspend for just a minute, Representative Anzels, thank you. I just wanted to point out that we had that discussion about the referendum revenue per school district and from most to least, and that information is in your packet. So
beautiful.
Very good. So
great staff.
Thank you. Yes, they are. They're excellent staff. So, all right. So the school trust lands subject, as you know, has been the subject of some discussion in the legislature. There was legislative action taken in the 2012 year, I believe it was. And Representative O'Driscoll, you were one of the members keenly involved in that, so we'd like to have you kick off our hearing testimony today and talking about kind of where we are with that legislation and the state of our trust lands currently. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you had said, my name is Tim O'Driscoll, representative from District 13B, and it's my privilege and pleasure to be able to be here today in front of the Education Finance Committee to talk about the school trust lands. As I was just doing a kind of a quick head count, they came up with maybe five or six people who are on the committee who maybe haven't heard of school trust lands, and maybe another two or three who maybe have heard about it once or twice before because they were freshmen last year and we have freshmen this year. Just a quick background on school trust lands, what they are, how they work. When the state of Minnesota became a state, according to the Enabling Act that was granted by the federal government for Minnesota to become a state, we were required, as were other states, to set aside at least one section of land in a town, in each of the townships in the state of Minnesota for the purpose and benefit of public education. Now, to kind of put that into context for folks, a township measures 6 miles by 6 miles, and as a result of the government rectangular survey of the early 1800s, we started seeing a lot of lands west of the Mississippi River in kind of a grid system, so it became very easy to identify those properties. A section of land is 1 square mile by 1 square mile and contains 640 acres of land. And so Minnesota said, you know, if we're going to have a school section land, section 16, be for public education and the benefits and purposes of public education, if one is good, two is better. So sections 36 and 16 in every township in the state of Minnesota has been set aside for the purpose of funding public education. We do it differently now than we did at the time that the state of Minnesota was incorporated as a state. I tell people to get the perspective on this. If you remember the television show, Little House on the Prairie, the Ingalls girls would go to the one-room schoolhouse with their sisters and with the other members of the immediate area. And the schoolhouse needed to be built, and it needed to have a furnace, and it needed to have water, and it needed to have educational supplies. Well, that property is most likely, the schoolhouse is most likely located on the school section property. And because Minnesota has such a large predominance of agricultural-based economy, what would happen would be a lot of those lands would be leased for crops, and the revenues from those crops would be brought in, and they would then be used to fund the education. Well, the state of Minnesota also has a very diverse set of natural resources. Agricultural is a big part of our base. We also have timber. We also have mining and mineral resources. Keep in mind that these properties are located throughout the entire state of Minnesota. And as a matter of fact, one of the parcels of property that people know quite well in this state, but may not know at one time was a part of the school trust lands, is where the runway is, I should say one of the runways is at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, is on former school trust lands property. It was sold, and we oftentimes kid, it sure would have been nicer just done a lease on that property with the MAC versus having transferred ownership on that. And so what happened is over the last number of years, these school trust lands properties that are held in trust, and every one of you on this committee as a member of the Minnesota legislature are a trustee on that. You owe a duty to the kids in the state of Minnesota to manage those properties in such a way that they are going to be bringing in revenues for the kids in the state of Minnesota. Again, as I said, we've changed the way that we do education funding. We have a lot of general fund money that goes in to fund E-12 education here in the state of Minnesota. But nonetheless, the school trust lands money is also an area that, that generates revenues. And so that Representative Anzels, who I know would be offering this, and so I'm just going to give him the kudos on this, he will tell us that a large portion of the revenues that come to the school trust lands come from an area that he represents up in the Iron Range area. And he's exactly right because of the mineral resources that are in there, the iron ore, the taconite industry, and the like. And what we did in 2012 was we moved up in the prioritization for the legislature, the school trust lands. And what we said was we were going to form a commission. And for those of you who are not familiar with the difference between a committee and a commission, committees are members of one chamber and members of another chamber in their respective houses. And when we talk about school trust lands and pensions and different things, they are commissions, which are boards or bodies that are made up of both members from the Senate and members from the House. In 2012, we endeavored as a legislature to put more legislative oversight on the management and the delivery of revenues for the purposes of funding education in the state of Minnesota by putting in place a school trust lands commission. Currently, that commission is made up of 12 members, 6 from the House, 6 from the Senate, and 3 from the majority party and 3 from the minority party. And we try to take the political aspect out of this as much as we can because we do not believe that education, when we talk about school trust lands, is a political or an item that should be a getcha-gotcha, as this place sometimes can be on different issues. And so the speaker will appoint from the majority party, the minority leader will appoint from the minority party, and the same thing in the Senate, the majority leader and the minority leader will each respectively appoint from their caucuses. In 2013, what we ended up doing was bringing forth the first active participation of the board with the enabling legislation from 2012. We were very fortunate because this had strong bipartisan support. And this could not have been done without the work of, at the time, of then Representative Denise Dietrich from up in the Champlin area. Representative Dietrich has been a strong champion of this as a DFL member. When I got here in 2011, I had a chance to meet Representative Dietrich and to work with her and with Grace Kelleher from the Minnesota School Boards Association and other interested parties to advance this legislation. It's been something that had been tried when the Democrats were in control, something when the Republicans were in control, and we just said, let's lock arms and just do what needs to be done and the things that are right for kids. I just, again, want to just take one quick deviation from my thoughts on this, my comments, to let members know, and particularly newer members, when a bill passes off the House floor, it's almost impossible to get a unanimous vote on something, unless it's really a no-brainer or it's a technical item. There's usually someone that has some kind of not pleased with this, not happy about that, and they'll vote against it. We were very pleased to be able to put up 103 of the 134 votes from the Minnesota House on a bipartisan basis to pass this. Upon repassage, after we were done with the conference committee, we actually picked up and brought that up to about 108 people, picking up five additional members or thereabouts on repassage, which tends to sometimes lose members because the things that you were concerned about might have been bargained out in a conference committee. So we're very pleased that the legislature, on a bipartisan basis, has moved this forward and said that this is an important item for kids in the state of Minnesota. So talking about these assets, what happens, how do they work, where are we at? Currently, in the Department of Natural Resources is charged with the same fiduciary duty that you are, as I am, as is the governor in the state of Minnesota, and all 201 members of the legislature, with the job of making sure that we manage those school trust lands for the benefit of public education to be profitable, to generate income. Currently, it's estimated that we have about 1 million students in the K-12 programs that benefit from these dollars in public schools, and we are able to generate about $27 per pupil unit per year that's going to the district. So it's about $27 million that's coming from the school trust lands. Now, very quickly, how does this work? The monies that are generated from the sale of assets or from the operations of school trust lands, the gross receipts, then the DNR deducts their costs for operation, and the net income from that is then transferred into a fund that is managed by the SBI, the State Board of Investments. And from that, the revenues are then paid out to the school district. And so if you figure that you've got 1,000 students in your school district times $27 per pupil, that's $27,000. And a lot of folks will say, well, gee, $27,000 doesn't seem like an awful lot of money for a school district to be able to have. But I can tell you that never have I heard or am aware of a school district has sent a $27,000 check back to the state of Minnesota saying it wasn't enough, could you try again? They're very happy to be able to receive those funds to help fund their operations and to fund the different kinds of things that are important to their school districts. The main purpose and drive of the School Trust Fund, the School Trust Lands Commission, was to help provide oversight of the DNR and others to make sure that we are upkeeping our fiduciary obligation, the highest that we have to work solely, wholly, and exclusively on behalf of the kids in the state of Minnesota when it comes to managing these lands, to make sure that we're getting the best receipts that we can, minimizing expenses so we can maximize the net profit that comes from those assets that can go into the corpus, which will be managed into perpetuity for the benefit of kids in the public school systems here in the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair, that's just an overview, and I stand for questions or however you'd like to utilize me as part of this process this afternoon.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, and it was a very good overview, and I know for some of the new members on the committee, I'm sure that's beneficial to you to know what has occurred. So we'll open up to questions. Representative Anzels, you're the first on the list.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought, now that you've heard the sanitized version of what the school trust and also the U of M trust is all about, you need to know the real scoop, especially new committee members. And the real scoop is the bulk of these dollars, $27 a pupil, come from iron ore mining. So for those who are education advocates, as we all are on this committee, if you're interested in providing more dollars off the permanent K-12 trust fund to kids in your school districts, my first message is you should support iron mining. Secondly, if you support additional dollars for kids from the K-12 trust fund, you should support sustainable forestry, because it's through the DNR's management, wise management of Minnesota forest lands, that additional dollars are generated to educate kids. Thirdly, you should know that Minnesota's iron ore industry, over the last 125 years, has cherry-picked the ore body, meaning they have neglected school trust fund lands and University of Minnesota lands in favor of lands that were owned by private fee owners. Rockefeller, Pillsbury, Great Northern Ore Trust, ConocoPhillips, and many other private fee owners, none of whom live in Minnesota, and none of whom pay taxes on their royalties on their ore profits since 1986. Fourthly, committee members should know that Representative Driscoll's good work on the commission and Representative Dietrich's great work leads one to conclude from time to time that Minnesota can generate additional dollars through efficiencies and other policies to generate more dollars that way for kids from the K-12 trust fund. And they compare Minnesota to other states, most notably Utah. Utah's royalties for school children come from oil and gas. Ours, the bulk of which, comes from iron mining. And these are two dramatically different economic activities. And comparing Minnesota to Utah is really not very worthwhile. And the last point that I'd make about this topic, well, the second to the last. The second to the last is, as we do our work as legislators and we look at Minnesota and our diversity and our geography and our differences, I will remind committee members from time to time that nearly 95% of this wealth is generated for your school kids by the people of northeastern Minnesota. It's the people of northeastern Minnesota who are sharing this wealth pursuant to the Constitution with you all. And my last point is getting to generating more revenue. Nothing will generate more revenue for your kids from the K-12 trust fund. Nothing will generate more money than an active, vibrant, and successful copper nickel mining industry. And I just would want committee members, especially newer committee members, to try to keep some of my points in mind as we go forward this session. And as you might expect, Madam Chair, thank you for the time.
Did you have a question about themselves?
I'm always willing to discuss these matters further with committee members. So thank you for your indulgence.
Absolutely, Representative Van Zyls.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Just to add to some of the things that Representative Van Zyls has said, I think you're going to find that there are a large number of legislators who do support mining and do support jobs in your part of the state of Minnesota. And I do respect and acknowledge that a lot of the resources that are profitable right now are in the northern part, in the Iron Range area. But at different parts of the state of Minnesota have different things to contribute to the success of Minnesota. You get down into the southern part of the state of Minnesota where we have very very fertile farmlands to be able to feed our people in the state of Minnesota, the iron ore and the jobs that are up in that part of the state, the waterways that are here that have served as the highway system to be able to that go through many of the communities of people that are in the legislature and those who are sitting around here as well. We are one Minnesota when it comes to that, and I just want to make sure that we do acknowledge that it is in your district, but we are one Minnesota when we talk about those related matters.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Representative Anderson, do you have a question?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Short question here. As we're talking about the money available to the school districts, not a large amount in terms of per pupil, Representative, is that money dedicated or how does it go to the schools? Is it part of the general state aid fund or what happens to it?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, to your question, the money is not dedicated right now. The school districts can use that as they see fit. There have been discussions over the years about making those for dedicated funds for this or that, or definitely not for this and more likely for that. But as it stands right now, there are no strings attached to how a school district can use those particular funds. To the issue, Madam Chair, there was a second part of that question and it escapes me right now. Representative Anderson could just repeat that.
Did you have a second part to your question?
Well, actually, it escaped me too. So.
I'll just finish my thoughts with this. Given the fact that these are not dedicated dollars, it was something I was thinking about with what you had said. What used to happen in the state of Minnesota was the school districts used to get X many dollars from a general fund transfer, and then what would happen would be we would deduct the amount they would get from their general fund transfer and reduce that by the amount of money that they would get from the school trust lands payment. So if a school district, and I'll just use easy numbers, was to get $100,000 and they were to receive a $10,000 school trust lands payment, the general fund would pay $90,000, the trust fund would pay $10,000, giving them their $100,000. Now what has happened through legislation that has corrected that, they would get their $100,000 payment plus their $10,000 payment.
All right, thank you both. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative O'Driscoll, looking at the biennial summary, in the executive summary, I'm noticing that the deposit to the permanent school fund went down by a little bit more than $1.6 million. And over half of that was, I guess, basically attributed to protection costs going up over 54%, going up over $819,000, almost $820,000. And I'm trying to understand that, 54% increase in that cost. Do you have any enlightening you can give us?
Representative O'Driscoll, just 1 second. Representative Quam, I'll allow Representative O'Driscoll to respond, but just so you know, we will have someone from the DNR here to talk about their presentation as well.
Madam Chair, I'd like, having worked with Representative O'Driscoll, I'd like his insight on this topic.
Absolutely. Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, thank you. The issues that you're bringing up are the issues that we had seen as a legislature and putting in the oversight on the school trust lands. Sometimes what happens is different leases that are let for different resources affects the top line. You do have some fixed costs that are going to go through. There are going to be some variable costs that are going to happen to get that net income from an accounting standpoint. The DNR is going to be better suited to give you the reasons and the rationales as to why they've done what they've done. But to further that point, this is one of the reasons why the commission was established, was to ask those kinds of questions and to be an internal legislative advocacy on this. Last year in our, I should go back, in the 2012 legislation, we had asked for a director to be appointed as a part of that. Governor Dayton did sign the legislation that asked for and calls for the governor to make an appointment of an executive director for the school trust lands. Last year in the omnibus budget bill that was passed by the legislature, there was funding that was placed in that as well. And to this date, the governor has yet to appoint a person who can, on behalf of the school trust lands, being independent. Now, later today, you're going to hear that within the DNR that they have tasked an individual with that duty inside the DNR. The spirit and intent of the legislation is that it be done independent of the DNR, since the DNR is the one who is spending the money and the one who is managing that we get that more of a cross and check and balance on that. So those are the exact things that you're talking about that we were looking to be able to have housed at the Department of Administration, this person, so that they were outside of the four walls of the DNR and would not only have autonomy by law, but have physical autonomy away from the DNR and its day-to-day operations to be able to requisition and ask for information. A little bit more about the executive director. Governor Dayton has indicated prior to the election that his intentions were to not make that appointment until after the election cycle this time, because he said we don't know who's going to be governor, and he felt that that would be something that the new governor should have the ability to appoint. And since Governor Dayton was reelected, my assumption is that soon we'll hear from the governor as to who he is going to select and offer for confirmation at the Senate on that position, in keeping with what he had indicated to the folks in Minnesota prior to the election.
Oh, thank you. Representative Quam, do you have any other questions?
Madam Chair, I believe I have several for the DNR.
Thank you. And just for the members and those in the audience, there is a representative from the Department of Administration here, and we will ask him to come up later after we've heard from the DNR to see where the status of that appointment is. So,
Madam Chair, would you like me to stick around for additional questions?
I do have one other person on the list, Representative Hertas. Did you have questions for Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, I had the opportunity to attend a school trust land tour. I think it was maybe the summer before last. It was interesting to note that in management of the forest lands in particular, as they're identified, this is a long-term management practice where it takes 40 years to get a crop of timber. And after deducting the costs and the operations and whatnot, it's the net proceeds that are deposited to the school trust. And in your presentation, it maybe sounded a little bit like the appearance that the revenues are dispersed to the school districts, but I understood it, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the money is deposited to the trust, and then only the dividends or the interest or the return on investment is the stable amount of money that is dispersed to the school district. So with that in mind, using the principle of highest and best use regarding land, certain school trust lands may have a much greater potential to contribute to the asset base of the trust by its liquidation, and the dividend on those receipts would be much higher than just managing it as timberland. And so those would be perhaps selected properties that could be identified as part of this process. And not only would it contribute to the base of the trust and generate larger revenues in shorter periods of time, it would also have the upside of becoming a tax-paying property, which would also generate money for the schools in terms of tax capacity.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hertas, to your first point, thank you for reiterating what I did say, that the net amount goes into the fund, and then the SBI, the State Board of Investment, manages those, and that's where those come out, about $27 per pupil, the dividend, if you will, on that. Your second point about the highest and best use, one of the things that the legislation from 2012 also tasked the DNR to do was to prioritize the school trust lands. Where are they? Where are they at? And what's the best long-term benefit for those? We have within a, I'll just take the idea of a township where we've got 36 sections. There may be some publicly owned lands that are around school trust lands, and it doesn't make sense to be able to have that one small parcel that's still within other publicly owned lands to remain in title for the school trust lands. So there's a list of properties that are being identified to reunite the fee titles on those and to reunite the fees on those to be able, by fee, it's a real estate term about how you would own that, you'd reunite that ownership into one. That can be accomplished in a couple different ways. It can be accomplished in a sale. It can also be accomplished in a land swap. The problem that we have when we look at doing a land sale is we get the immediate revenues, but we're prohibited from buying additional real estate with those revenues that are generated from the sale. So what oftentimes happens is we have a parcel over here that makes sense to reunite for school trust lands, where there's some public lands, and over here there's some properties that are publicly owned where there's school trust, to try to figure out a value to do literally a swap, because then you haven't increased or decreased. So there's some rolling together and managing of those. And then there are also lands that have been prioritized because of where they are, how they're used, and their productivity for mining or for agricultural or for forestry, that they just don't make sense, that eventually will end up coming to market. The problem that we have is if we in the state of Minnesota are going to look at purchasing some of those properties, because they've also been determined to still be in the best interest of Minnesotans to hold those in public hands versus private hands, the trust lands need to be paid. Right? It's not, we can't just say, well, it's government and it's publicly owned land, so we're the state of Minnesota, so we can just go and take this. We can't. That's why I'm saying that it's a trust where we are trustees. We have to look out for and owe a fiduciary duty as legislator, as the 201 members of the legislature and the governor, for the oversight of these lands. And so we have to always be asking and looking for putting the kids' best interest first on that. And some of that may be to sell that property, and as part of the tasking with the DNR, then maybe they will, as a part of their presentation, share with you the prioritization and the approximate dollars that are needed to be able to do some of the things that Representative Hertas was highlighting here.
All right. With that, I don't see any other questions, so I want to thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for all of your hard work and for giving us a good overview on this issue today, and thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it, members.
All right. Next, we'd like to hear from the Department of Natural Resources, and gentlemen want to come up. I believe we have the commissioner, as well as, I need my glasses, Aaron Van Lind, School Trust Administrator. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. Welcome to the Education Finance Committee, and I'll let you proceed in whatever order you've worked out between the two of you on presentation today, but welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Tom Langer. I'm the Commissioner of Natural Resources. I'm going to be brief and open up this presentation. Mr. Vandalindy, who you'll hear from next, provided you with a set of his slides. He's going to go over some basic information on the trust lands and the trust land administration. I was appointed commissioner in 2011, and I quickly learned about the responsibility of the commissioner as a trustee of these lands, and simultaneously the complexity of the management of these lands. That was reinforced very quickly in legislation, both in 2011 and 2012. As a result of the concern, we implemented several changes very early on, including a commissioner's order, which recognized that we needed to have some better continuity of operations in the department with respect to trust land management. The commissioner's order lays that out, brought the divisions managing the different resources more into line. And also we appointed a trust lands administrator to oversee the operation and management of school trust lands across all the divisions in the DNR. There are at least three. And that was Mr. Aaron Vandalindy. So Aaron is going to give you, again, a little background on school trust land issue. And then, Madam Chair, members, I'll be happy to answer any questions. We both will be happy to answer any questions after that. Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to Aaron.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Good afternoon, members. Aaron Vandalindy, DNR School Trust Land Administrator. My presentation, I don't know if you had a chance to look through it on your tables yet, but I do have a little bit of a history lesson in there, so I might cover some of the ground that Representative O'Driscoll covered, but provide a little bit more information with it as well. So where we're going today, really with the agenda, is just a historical background. I'll talk to you about really the school trust lands, where they're at, where they're located, and some of the changes that the DNR has made, and one of the major changes came out of the 2012 legislation, which required the DNR to do a school trust inventory and identify the highest and best uses of those school trust lands. So I'll touch on that briefly, and then I will talk a little bit about the annual income that's distributed to the school districts and how that's actually worked. So historical background, I will tell you this land came from the spoils of war. Everything that was out of the Northwest Territory after the American Revolution that the United States gained became part of the early part of Minnesota school trust lands. So the language that came out of the Northwest Ordinance, and I'm originally from the state of Virginia, so Thomas Jefferson was in charge of that Northwest Ordinance. I like to believe that this is his language. It says, knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. So coming out of the American Revolution, the United States was strapped for cash. We had no cash. The states that were coming into the Union could not rely on the federal government to provide funds for education. So this was how Jefferson and the members of the Northwest Ordinance, this was the methodology that they came to put those states on equal footing, and they gave them land. The land to support public education. And in our Constitution, it actually says, for the support of public education, support of public schools. Minnesota, as Representative O'Driscoll said earlier, received two sections in its original grant in 1858. It was Section 16 and 36. Minnesota was the first state to receive two sections. Every state before us received one section. States after Minnesota received two or more sections. An analogy was drawn to Utah earlier, I believe. Utah actually has four sections of school trust land in each township. So, so in Minnesota, under our Constitution, we treat all four federal grants as school trust land. So we ended up just around the turn of the 20th century with 8.1 million acres. So the original Enabling Act, those are the original school lands, Section 16 and 36. Was 2.9 million acres. 1857, we had what was called the In Lieu Act, where Section 16 and 36 was already conveyed or already part of a reservation or was underwater. The federal government actually replaced those lands with in lieu lands. And in 1860, the federal government extended the Swamp Act and the swamp lands to Minnesota. And we ended up with 4.7 million acres there, and then 1866, the Internal Improvement Act, and that was for the improvement of our states from an economic development. So 8.1 million acres is where we started. A little history recap again, Northwest Ordinance, the Organic Act, the Enabling Act, and now we have the School Fund, which was created in the Minnesota Constitution to support education. If you think about this as a trust, Representative O'Driscoll talked about it, and we have a legal obligation. Everybody that's making a decision on it is a trustee and has a duty to meet the mandates of the trust. And when we look at it from the DNR standpoint, we have to look at the legislation, and it's 127A.31, and that's the goal of, that's the legislative goal of the Permanent School Fund. And in short, it says to manage for the long term, secure the long term fiduciary responsibility to the trust and generate income with sound natural resource and management principles. And that's the language that's in 127A, or a rough approximation. In 2012, the legislature actually provided the DNR some more guidance and changed our management statute under 84027. And actually put a little bit more clarity for the DNR and what it meant to manage with sound natural resource and conservation management principles. And really, when we look at it now, it's we have to give precedence to long-term economic returns, and we have to actually compensate for the trust when we're going to put or place a policy on school trust lands that prohibits revenue. The DNR did the legislature one better in our operational order that Commissioner Landwehr mentioned earlier. We actually hold ourselves to the standard of if we are going to restrict or prohibit revenue generation, that is when we compensate for us. So not just prohibitions, but restrictions and prohibitions. But back to the legal obligation, we have a duty to act with undivided loyalty to the trust. And the easiest analogy that when I talk to DNR staff about this, and we have to talk about it often, is that we have a contract with the trust, and we're bound by the contract to manage the trust the way the trust tells us. and that's to secure the long-term economic return. I will tell you the what does it mean to be long-term is a question that we struggle with and that we're working on, but it's not an easy job to just get it answered in a couple of years. So the trust assets, we actually have two trust assets. There is a financial asset. As of September of 2014, the financial asset, revenues that have been generated off the land that are now held in the fund are worth $1.1 billion. So we are now over a billion. That is the first time ever. That is not the value of the fund. That's actually the deposits that are in the fund. If you talk to the State Board of Investment, I believe the value of the fund is valued at $1.3 billion. But I admittedly have not checked this week. And as Representative Anzels mentioned earlier, here is your breakdown of where the assets have come from. These trust assets, over 80% of the money that is in the permanent school fund has come from minerals and mineral development and mineral leasing. And these are mainly royalty payments. Second on the list is forest products. It's right around 9%, and then real estate and then investments. So we do have a little bit built in there for the value of the fund going up in the investments. The other asset in the fund is, as you can see on the screen, 2.5 million acres. That is what we have remaining from the 8.1 million acres from the four federal grants. Again, as Representative Van Zelt said earlier, the majority of the land is in northeast Minnesota. You can see it on the map. It is the dark colored spots all across the northeastern part of the Arrowhead. That is where we do most of our trust management. That is where the majority of the land is located. We do have scattered parcels in the southern part of the state. In the DNR southern region, we have 600 acres, less than 600 acres of school trust land. The reason why is because we did not lease that school trust land to support education. We actually sold it to farmers. I'm not going to second guess that decision, but I think somebody said before, if we would have leased it instead, we would have been much better off from a trust perspective. We would have leased that farmland instead of selling it off. So that is where we're at as of 2014. This is the cover of the biennial report. Looks a little bit different. This map, it's kind of hard to see on that, and if you didn't get color, I can get you a color copy. Most of the lands are in Coochin County, but from the federal grants, this is where we're at today. Original school lands, Section 16 and 36, were at 968,000 acres approximately. The Swamp Trust, 1.5 million acres of swamp lands. This is, I think, key is if you look at what the purpose of the Swamp Trust Act was, it was to drain the lands and turn them into agricultural purposes. And that was an inability to do that, I guess, to say the least, in the northeastern part of the state. Not a lot of good farmland. We ended up with a considerable amount of swamp trust. And right now, part of my job is actually trying to find an economic use for that land. We're working on it. And then we still have just 6,500 acres of internal improvement land. So I actually combined the in-lieu lands as original school lands in this, just for simplicity's sake, because there's only 20-some thousand. From the DNR management standpoint, as I said before, we approach this as we have a fiduciary duty. The way I approach it is my boss, Mr. Landwehr, Commissioner Landwehr, is the trustee for the trust. Under the statute, he has the duty to manage the trust lands. My job is to make recommendations to the commissioner to make sure that we are doing what's in the best interest of the children.
Mr. Vandalin, if you'd suspend for just a moment, we do have a question. Representative Murphy, did you want to ask your question now?
No, I'll wait. I just wanted to be on the list.
Very well. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I mentioned the changes to Chapter 84 from 2012 previously. I won't dwell on that too much other than to mention that the inventory I'll get to in just a second. And then our my position, the trust administrator, I really coordinate what the DNR is doing on trust lands. We have an interdisciplinary team that I lead. We address everything from forest management leases to iron mining to copper nickel mining, dimension stone, you name it, real estate sales. Everything that comes across trust land has to come across my desk before it's recommendation to the commissioner's office. In 2013 and in the biennial budget report from fiscal 12 and 13, the second half of that report does have the inventory and does have the compensation plan that was required. That's at the end of the report. And the other thing that the DNR has really been working on, one of the things that I've been leading the school trust team on, is our business plan and an operations manual. As I mentioned before, we have some consternation on what it means to manage for the long-term interest of the trust, and what factors do you take into consideration when you're making a decision long-term. If anybody's heard me testify about this before, my comment is long-term for me is my grandkids' grandkids. That's about as far as I can think. And I have an 11 and a 9-year-old, so I'm not close to being a grandparent. So it's about as far out as I can think when I think long-term. So I look 2 to 3 rotations, 40-year Aspen rotations that Representative Hurtis mentioned earlier. It's about as far as I can think from a management standpoint. So how are we going to manage the land better? The first thing that we really looked to do was come up with this highest and best use inventory. The highest and best use inventory, just so you know, highest and best use is an appraisal term. It tells you what the best use of the property is and where you're going to generate your most of your funds. When we went through this inventory classification, we ended up with over 1 million acres identified as its highest and best use as a mineral estate. And these lands, I should say, this 2.5 million acres that we're talking about, is where we have a united surface and mineral estate. The school trust does own another 1 million acres of severed mineral rights that we do manage for the trust, but this inventory really just dealt with the unified estate, and we operate under the assumption that the highest and best use of the severed minerals is minerals, because we don't have access to the surface to manage it for that. The ranking on this is really, when the DNR looked at it, is what were the highest and best uses and where were we going to generate the most money long term. And we looked at it and ranked it as mineral estate, real estate development lands, productive forests, your extractable resources, surface resources, and that's really your sand and gravels. Agricultural land, you won't be surprised to see on that list that there's 0 acres of highest and best use, because it was all sold. And we actually ended up with recreational lands as the highest and best use as well. But from the productive forest standpoint that came up earlier, I think it's telling on this is we didn't just look at it as its highest and best use and that's the only use we can use it for. We looked at what its other secondary and tertiary uses would be. And so you look at it and you say, if mineral estate was its highest and best use, did it have other uses if we ever determined that the minerals weren't valuable or there wasn't any reason to explore there? So we looked at and looked at to see if real estate was an option or productive forest was an option. And that's what this chart's trying to show, is that in the highest and best use for a productive forest, we had over 800,000 acres, or 860,000 acres, or 20,000 acres, excuse me. But when you add in the other secondary uses from where productive forest was a high use but not the highest, we had another 200,000 acres, so, or another 800,000 acres, excuse me. I'm looking at the chart wrong. So we have roughly 1.5 million acres where we can actually manage that for forestry and forestry purposes and generate revenue from that source. One of our DNR Deputy Division Director actually says, forestry is the work that you do on the school trust lands while you're waiting for a mine to be developed. So that's just to put it in perspective. We also looked at uses from the school trust land that don't have a very high use, but they have other qualities that that we thought were important. One were stewardship lands, and that's really where we have some old growth forests or some scientific and natural areas and things of that nature where we have some rare natural resources that we want to preserve on those lands, but it's not an economic use, and we thought it was important to identify those. And then the last category, if you look, is your unproductive lands. These unproductive lands are where we did not have a high-value mineral deposit, we thought. It doesn't have an ability to generate forest revenue or timber revenue from fiber. And there was no ability to generate revenue from real estate. I lovingly refer to those lands as Cooch County, because that is mainly where they are, and all 400,000 acres of those are swamp trust lands. So it's telling what the swamp trust really was, that 1.5 million acres, and you know, almost a third of it is unproductive. So out of the 2.5 million acres that we have, really about 2 million of it can be used for generation, economic generation. A quick map, real quick, just to show you where they are in some fiscal 14 numbers. If you look at the red, it's St. Louis County, Coochin County, and Itasca County. That is where the majority of the school trust lands are. The second tier are your blues and greens and then yellows. So again, it's most of the land is consolidated in northeast Minnesota. The majority of the land is consolidated into three counties, in St. Louis, Coochin, and Itasca. Switching gears real quick to revenues. I didn't come prepared to talk about fiscal 12 and 13 revenues. I do have my biennial report. If I need to refer back to it, I can. Fiscal 14 revenues actually look considerably better than fiscal 13 revenues. I'll tell you the one caveat on the minerals revenues of the $50 million in net revenues was a one-time payment. The department actually, represented by the Attorney General's office, won its arbitration against U.S. Steel last year in fiscal 14, and that was a one-time payment of
$25 million.
Part of that 25 went to the permanent university fund, but I believe roughly 20 of it went to the school trust fund. So really on the minerals is running about the normal from fiscal 12 to 13 and 14, around $30 to $35 million a year in net revenues for minerals. We're just going to see an anomaly in fiscal 14 until we restate those revenues and restate them for fiscal 8 through 14 from that arbitration settlement. In forestry, the net revenue or the deposit from the forest expense account to the trust will be $2.2 million. Under that forest certification process, we also include real estate revenues, and the real estate revenues were $425,000, $1.8 from forest timber sales mainly, and that was largely due to some change in policy on how we managed our red pine and our aspen and changing our rotation ages. We had a very profitable year from the forest standpoint, and we also we're not burdened, Representative Anderson, with we weren't burdened with the protection costs as we were before. The legislature made a change in 2012 to not allow the DNR to certify its protection costs under Minnesota statutes any longer. So that reduced the certification charge by roughly $1.2 million. The typical And Representative Plum, I can answer your question if you'd like now. I just, as a quick diversion, in fiscal 12 and 13, we had severe fire years in that year and large increases in our protection costs. The trust was the only private landowner in the state that was actually paying protection costs. So the legislature corrected that. The trust doesn't pay protection costs anymore. But the reason the costs were so high was the severity of the drought conditions in northwestern Minnesota. And we also had two major wind events that knocked down a considerable amount of trust timber. And we had to sell that timber at salvage costs, or 50% of the value. So the protection costs went up and the revenues went down because of the salvage operations. So that's the... I'm sorry.
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, what we saw reported wise was revenue went up by 4%.
Mr. Vandalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I said, I wasn't looking at my fiscal 12 and 13 beforehand, but that very well might be true. I was just trying to address your question earlier. Thank you. So from the DNR management standpoint, last session, the DNR had a number of proposals with a number of its stakeholder groups to compensate the trust under the compensation plan that was required of the DNR. The amount to compensate the DNR for the prohibitions alone is between $50 and $100 million to compensate the trust for the prohibitions that are placed on school trust land. No money has been appropriated for that. We're still under a deadline to finish the compensation by 2018. The legislature nevertheless did appropriate $1 million to the DNR to quote-unquote meet its fiduciary responsibility to Minnesota school children. I look at this $1 million appropriation as demonstration projects to demonstrate to the legislature how the DNR can actually manage the trust for the long-term best interest of the school children. I worked with the school trust team, that interdisciplinary team. We came up with four projects where we thought we could spend the $1 million that were in line with really where the revenues have historically come from. The first one is a minerals management project that, as Representative Van Zyl says before, it was Pillsbury's and Rockefeller's and those that were having their lands mined and not the school trust lands. This minerals management project actually looks to address that and change the ownership patterns within the mine pits so that the school trust lands continue to be mined. We really don't have much to say on how MNTAC mines the school trust ore, but they are the main producer on school trust lands right now is at MNTAC. But we need to open up some stockpiling areas for MNTAC. And the way we like to manage the minerals on the Iron Range is to take the lean ore and the waste rock from school trust lands and place it on top of school trust lands so we don't co-mingle the land statuses, if you will. We do that because one of the main economic drivers on the range these days is the actual scram mining operations from the lean ores through magnetation and mining resources. They've seen a considerable boom in the amount of revenue that they're generating.
Mr. Vandalin, if anyone has their phone or anything close to the microphones, if you could move it, because it will cause interference with our sound system. Great, thank you.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair.
Please go ahead.
The other projects, and I won't dwell too long on them, are strategic real estate projects and timber projects. The real estate projects look to realign where the school trust assets are located so that we have consolidated blocks to manage. We've done some economic analysis. We have a forest economist in the DNR and has done a considerable amount of work for us on how we actually identify and manage the school trust lands. We've done analysis on what it means to manage a consolidated block of land and reducing your boundaries and the savings that the trust would encounter, the DNR would encounter in its management costs, hence the trust would get a larger net return. The timber resource management project is actually a project that looks to, I don't want to say convert a timber stand, but we're looking to look at the soil expectation value of all the school trust lands, not all the school trust lands, but a select piece of school trust lands for this project so that we are growing the right timber on the right type of land. So some land is best for aspen, some land is best for red pine, some land is best for cedar. We want to make sure that we have the right forest cover type on the right type of land so that we can maximize our revenues that way and grow the trees faster, to be quite honest with you. We're compared to this Washington and Oregon also quite a bit with our timber resources. We don't have the Norway pine that Washington has. We're not selling it at $175 a cord. We're selling aspen and things of that nature at roughly $20-$25 a cord. So we get compared to those states quite a bit. I don't know that we have the same resources that they have. We have the same land type. So the last project that we're proposing and will propose is a recreational use payment. Currently, the DNR and others actually pay the trust to lease the land for its recreational use. A great example is the Mesabi Trail. We lease the Mesabi Trail from the trust. They lease the Mesabi Trail from the trust. We have identified 207 public water access sites on school trust lands. Those are riparian lands. They would be ideal for development, but we know that access to Minnesota's waters is a key component of living in Minnesota. As I said, I'm not from Minnesota. I've been here 17, almost 18 years, and it's a godsend to have that kind of access to all these lakes. And unfortunately, 207 of them are on school trust land. They were developed on school trust land. It's taken the trust's ability to generate revenue from that land. What we're proposing is a lease from the state or from the trust to the DNR to maintain those water access sites on the school trust lands. That will require a long-term funding solution, but we thought we could demonstrate our fiduciary duty again by generating a lease and some lease payments for the trust. I'm going to switch gears real quick just to show you where our potential revenue options or opportunities are. And I'll touch briefly on each of them, but I won't spend too much time. Wetland restoration and banking credits. The DNR and the trust is really not in the business of creating wetland banks or establishing those type of credits for sale. We have a conflict of interest. We'd be the landowner and also the regulator. If it was for mining opportunities, the DNR and the permit to mine is the responsible government unit. However, we did enter into and we actually finalized last week a land exchange. Representative O'Driscoll talked about a land swap earlier, where we exchanged roughly 12,500 acres of swamp trust land in the Sachs-Zim Bog area. It had a black spruce resource on it, but other than that, it had literally no income potential or minimal income potential for the trust. The calculation that I did was we had some spruce top sales and we had a peat lease, and those combined over a three-year period generated 27 cents an acre. Not a great return on your trust. What we've done is worked with a company that is actually going to restore the Sachs-Zim Bog area. That is an important birding area, an IBA for the Audubon Society of Minnesota. Conservation Fund worked with the DNR on that. Conservation Fund out of the project, they acquired Potlatch Timberlands, good pine and aspen ground in northwestern St. Louis County, and we got roughly a 2-to-1. We gave up 2 acres and we got 1 acre back, but we ended up with. If you're looking from a long-term standpoint for the trust, we have the ability now to manage and consolidate our ownership in that ore area for long-term management opportunities from timber production. The renewable energy piece, we've done a couple of things on it. There's been some talk in southwestern Minnesota about the opportunity to put solar on school trust lands. Hasn't really gotten off the ground. We've talked about it a little bit. The other option is wind energy. We actually do have an existing lease on the Iron Range right now in a Section 16 for wind energy development. The other opportunities really are your strategic real estate transactions. And when I talk about these, really, it's we have land to sell that would be ripe to sell if the market conditions were correct. Right now, I would submit to you that the market conditions from the real estate side are low. We're still at the bottom of the market, especially for recreational hunting land, which is what most of this would be. And it's probably not the best time to sell. So we look at developing plans on when we would sell those lands so we maximize the value. The other opportunity, it reads kind of weird. It says undervalued school trust resources. And really what we're addressing here is making sure that we capture all of the revenue options from the school trust lands whenever we're doing any kind of transaction. So making sure that we capture that there's a gravel resource or a sand resource or timber resources. And we're working through those and making sure that that's part of our process and we're getting the right reviews done. It's going with fits and starts, I will admit. We've missed a couple of things here or there, but all in all, I think we're making great progress on how we address these resources on the trust lands. I'm going to switch gears entirely and talk about the fund, the financial asset. I'll tell you, I do not manage the financial asset. I'm only in charge of the real estate. The State Board of Investment manages the financial investments, and under the statutes, Minnesota Management and Budget is in charge of managing the fund. As I said before, the fund as of September was at $1.1 billion. This is how the fund has grown, shrunk, and then grown over the last few years. If you'll notice, the little dip in 08 and 09, as you all can remember, I hope, is the economic downturn. That's really where the department and the economy was not producing revenue for the trust, and the value of those investments were decreasing just based on the nature of the economy. And then the last slide that I'll talk about really is the annual distribution to schools. I pulled this together last year for a presentation that I did to Minnesota School Board Association, so I borrowed it from that presentation, but the information is correct. Representative O'Driscoll said we have roughly 1 million children in public education. It's closer to 800,000. And the high point over the last 5 years was really in fiscal 13, I believe, where it was $29 per child. This year it's $28.78 per child. And with that, I will stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. very much. And I do have a list, but because I'm the chair, I have a question first, so I'll launch at you.
Very well.
I noted that that we are to receive a report by January 15th from the commissioner. I'm assuming that's you, Commissioner Landwehr, with consultation of the Commissioner of Education to the chairs and ranking members of the committees charged with both jurisdiction over natural resources and education on the financing these funds, and then we have to appropriate actually the expenditures from the trust funds, the allocation of the children. Do you know if that report has been sent forward? I don't believe I've seen it yet.
Madam Chair, members, the report has not been submitted yet, and I will tell you that is my fault. I looked at the legislation wrong. I read it as January 2015 and not January 15, 2015. It's complete. I just need to make some final tweaks to it and make sure it runs through the commissioner's office and they're okay with it. The demonstration projects that I talked about briefly a few minutes ago, that's what the report is.
Very well, good. Well, I thank you for clarifying that, and we'll look forward to seeing it when you get it sent over here shortly. Representative Murphy, thank you for your patience. And,
thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, Mr. Benlendi. I live in Section 15 of what was once a township. The school's down the road, and I remember teaching about the Northwest Ordinance, 1787, Northwest Territory, and emphasizing that that was where the big first declaration of public schools were important. It wasn't always just Thomas Jefferson, it came afterwards too. But then I've looked at these materials and listened to you, and I don't know when DNR became responsible for the school trust lands. And I don't know what happens when you've mentioned several times that the lands were sold. What happens then when the lands are sold, besides the fact that 31 counties now do not have any school trust lands, so the land must have been sold probably for agricultural purposes or some other purposes. And so unless we can purchase, there's no way of getting back to 8.1, and we're just at 2.5. So could you fill in some of those holes that I need a little more history about?
All right. Commissioner or Mr. Vandalin, whoever wants to take this one.
Madam right Chair, in. Members, I'm going to let Mr. Vandalin explain. I know it was authority was transferred to the department in 1931. We were a fledgling bit of what we are today, but Mr. Vandalin can give the history.
Mr. Vandalin?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, members. The school trust lands were transferred for management purposes in 1931 to the Department of Conservation, now DNR. And at that time, they changed the approach to management. And prior to that, they were managed, State Land Board. I can't remember the exact name of it, but that department had a approach of management of selling the land to generate the revenue. So they were selling the lands to generate the revenue to go into that corpus, and that's what would fund the corpus of the fund would actually fund education. So the DNR took over in 1931, or conservation took over in 1931. Before that, the lands, as you said, 31 counties, have little to no school trust lands. So when those lands are sold, you're taking your trust asset, your real property asset, and you're converting it to cash. And it then becomes part of the financial asset. So part of that $1.1 billion that's in the corpus of the fund is from real estate. There's still a law on the books, members, that says that school trust land can't be sold for less than $5 an acre.
Madam Chair, if I could...
Perhaps we should update that.
If I could Madam Chair, if I could add briefly to that, there is a report that's done biannually. It's a biannual report on the school trust lands, and it was last completed for 2012 and 13. This is on our website. It has much of that information that you just asked about, Representative Murphy, with respect to the history of the trust lands and the trust land management, goes into the description of the sale of 5.5 million acres and when it was converted to the department. And Mr. Vandalini prepared this as well. It also has that analysis about the highest and best use and the breakdown of the remaining 2.5 million acres into those categories.
Thank you, Commissioner. And members, you should have a complete copy of that in your folders for today. If you don't, let the pages know. We'll get one to you. Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, Mr. Vandalini, what about our resources from Kaolin mining Kaolin clay?
Mr. Vandalin?
I think that's the area where there doesn't seem to be any counties with who was that. Is that in private hands now too? Then all the Kaolin clay area?
Mr. Vandalin?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, members, the school trust does still have some Kaolin clay assets, if you will, or resources, that it's handled under our DNR Division of Lands and Minerals, and they would issue an industrial mineral lease under Minnesota law. A kaolin clay is an industrial mineral, so we'd issue an industrial mineral lease on that. And I do not believe we have any active kaolin clay leases, but I do know that we have some of the resources, yes.
Representative Murphy. All right, thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions concerning the school trust lands that are managed for the timber resources. Being that it takes 40 years to grow a crop, I'm presuming then that it's difficult to charge or cost the management of specific parcels to their end harvest dates. So I would assume that your charging all of your operating expenses for management of school trust land against all operating revenues. And if so, then I was curious as to what percent of your overhead or what percent of all of the revenue is actually recaptured by the DNR and how much of the total revenue is left for schools. And then the second question has to do with regard to the harvest of timber. I know it's a commodity much like corn or soybeans, but I was wondering if you could extrapolate in a normal market, what does that mean on a dollars per acre after expenses as a per acre, just like you'd say 100 bushel corn per acre, how many dollars per acre per year does that really turn out to be? If it's $1,000 net and it takes 40 years, is it $25 an acre? Is that what we're getting? So those are my two questions.
All right. Mr. Vandalin?
Madam Chair, Representative Hertas, members, the timber resources and the operating costs that we, as the DNR, have to extract when we're doing the management, it's a very labor-intensive job. Our timber resource this last fiscal year in fiscal 14 was $10 million, roughly $10 million from school trust land timber resources, and roughly 80% of that was used for operating costs. So the deposit of the $2 million is the margin. There's a 20% margin or 20% return from that. If you'll indulge me, I'd be happy to run the equation on the per acre per year number. I don't have that off the top of my head, but I'd be more than happy to get a forest economist to put that together for you and get that information to you. I don't want to speak out of turn and be entirely incorrect and do math in my head in front of a group, because it always goes poorly for me.
Mr. Vandalin, we'd be happy to have you submit that at a later time, and we'll make sure the members receive that information. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vandalindi, on page 13 of the report to which the Commissioner referred earlier is a listing of the 46 counties that have school trust fund land. Has there ever been a chart prepared that would show the county, the acreage, and the revenue that's received from that particular school trust fund land acreage?
Mr. Vandalin?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, and members, no, I don't know of a report where we've actually identified per county what we've made from each acre of school trust land. It wouldn't be very hard to do. All of our leases, all of our timber permits are tied back to the land, so it could easily be done. I'd be more than happy to submit that at a later date.
Oh, thank you. I you know, if it's too much work, don't worry about it, but I think it would be interesting for counties to learn also. I'm sure our county commissioners don't even know the value of this return. They probably even may not know they have school trust fund land. My second question, Madam Chair.
Representative Harris.
Thank you. Has the DNR looked at a value-added product that could be planted or a use for swampland, since we have so much swampland? Or, you know, are there value-added products? I think of cattails, and I know they're so protected, but is there a value-added that comes from cattails, and we could use some of those cattails as a revenue source, at least the product?
Mr. Vandalin or Commissioner?
Madam Chair, I might, members, I might let Mr. Vandalin talk about peat leases, because certainly they're relevant here, but... Right. One of the sort of generic opportunities we've been working in more in the forest land, but I think there's some relevance to your question as well, Representative Erickson, is the use of biofuels. You know, we have tremendous asset base with respect to forests and aging forests, and as demand kind of rises and falls, we'd like to be able to look at the use of some of the older forests for biomass, because it is it's there. It's Minnesota grown. Wood stove manufacturers, there are 9 of them in Minnesota. We could become self-generating in terms of the energy we use, and we're making some small inroads into that. I think that when you accept the notion that biomass can be a good fuel, you recognize that both cattails and grass and a lot of herbaceous vegetation provides that as well, and so I think there is some opportunity to look at some additional uses of that. Once upon a time, back in the early 1980s, the Center for Urban Regional Affairs at the University of Minnesota actually did a peat analysis, because at the time we were looking as a state at using peat for a heating resource. And, of course, natural gas prices went down and the cost of peat didn't, and so that kind of fell off the table. But anytime you've got organic matter, whether it's new or old, the opportunity to use it for energy is certainly there.
And one last question, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Mr. Vandalindi or Commissioner, and maybe you can't answer this, but if we were to expand mining in those counties that have mining already, for example, copper, nickel, platinum, would that be credited then toward the school trust fund, or can't we be a part of those return on leases or whatever?
Commissioner?
Well, Madam Chair, members, I can take a first stab at that. And the short answer to your question is, if the mineral resources are in the school trust portfolio, then the value of those resources come back to the school trust. And I'm going to give you two examples, because I think they illustrate the differences there. The proposed Polymet mine, if it were permitted to go ahead, it's 1,500 acres of new ground. None of that is school trust land. So we would get the normal state royalties out of that, but not the school trust royalties. The project that is still kind of on the drawing board, but you may have all heard about it, is Twin Metals. Twin Metals up closer to Ely is proposing exploring the possibility of a mine up in that area that does have school trust resources of substantial size.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative. And Representative Quam, did you have additional questions? No? All right. I don't see any other questions from committee members at this time, so I want to thank you both, Commissioner Landwehr and Mr. Vandalin, for your time and your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. All right, and now I'll ask the Minnesota School Board Association representatives if they'd like to come forward.
Good
that. And very nice to see you again, Representative Dietrich, and glad to have you back before the committee. It was a pleasure to serve with you on this committee in the past, and we're pleased to have you back with us on the other side of the testifier table this time. So,
thank you, Madam Chair, and the pleasure is all mine, and we see each other again, both in different roles.
Yes.
So congratulations on yours as well.
Thank you.
You'll make an excellent K-12 Finance Chair in the House of Representatives. We're proud to have you here.
Thank you so much. All right. Please introduce yourself officially for the record and proceed.
Will do. Thank you. As the Chair mentioned, my name is Denise Dietrich. I am with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I want to talk a little bit. First of all, I want to applaud the Chair for holding this this hearing. The school trust lands issue has been long ignored in the education world. And in fact, when I first started working on education funding and when we first started talking to many school board members about school trust lands, they weren't even aware of the fact that the children of this state own 2.5 million acres of land and another million in mineral rights, and that there is a permanent school fund, in other words, a trust fund, that where the school children of this state are the beneficiaries. And so what I'd like to start out by saying is that this this topic is very, very important to many of the school board members across the state. And why? That is, I think, the most important part. This is about the inheritance of our school children. Our founding fathers, upon statehood, found public education such an important topic that they actually set aside land for the school children of this state to be educated, for that money to be used, the land to be used, generated money into the future for hundreds of years to come. They knew the value of children learning to read and write, and that is why they did it. And so this is why this is just such an important issue for school board members across the state. But with that being said, this topic has taken quite a few paths in recent years. And I just want to make sure that that I highlight for you in summary what has happened recently. And in 2012, let's remember that we bipartisanly passed a bill that appointed a school trust lands director. The reason that we passed that bill is because we contended, and the legislature and the governor agreed by signing the bill, that in the management of the school trust lands by the DNR, there is divided loyalty. The commissioner of the DNR is the commissioner of the DNR. He has, or she has, whoever would be in that position at that time, has a duty to conservation and the management of lands for the benefit of all people in the state. And so because we own 2.5 million acres, we have a trust. Part of those trust obligations is to have a trustee. And a trustee, one of the first obligations of a trustee is that you cannot have divided loyalty. You need undivided loyalty. And I will continue to contend that the trustee cannot be the Department of Natural Resources, who is committed to the DNR, and be committed also to the beneficiaries of the trust at the same time. That does create divided loyalty. So, as I mentioned, 2012, we passed into a law the appointment of a school trust lands director. In 2012, the governor was, we thought, to appoint a school trust lands director by July 1st. That appointment did not happen. So our school board members asked us why. And we at that point didn't know, but the longer that we delved into it, what we learned is that the governor's office said it was because of some wording in the law that we did not allocate the amount of money that needed to be there for the position in the Department of Administrations. So what we did was in 2013 we passed another bill that allocated the money. That money is $185,000, and as of July 1st in 2014,
The money is now in the Department of Administration in order to hire a school trust lands director and for a department there. And so that money right now sits there, and it is not being used to any advantage to the beneficiaries. We have not hired our director, and so the commissioner has talked about, though, that he has hired an administrator within the DNR, and we appreciate that, but I think the thing that you have to remember is that administrator is also hired with school trust lands money. And to take that one step further, it is school trust lands money that was allocated by the legislature for other purposes. So once again, we allocated the money. July 1st came and went, and we still do not have an appointment, a school trust lands director appointment in the Department of Administration. Our school board members, as we went out to our fall area meetings, wondered why. Once again, a good question. And in fact, this time they actually felt betrayed that we still don't have our director in the Department of Administration. And so what they asked very strongly and very firmly, what can we do? What action can we take? We have two laws in two different years, both signed by the governor. What action can school board members take? And it was really one of those interesting times where it was more of an organic thing. One school board member from up north actually passed a resolution at his school board urging the governor to appoint a school trust lands director, and it just happened organically that now we have almost 20 school boards across the state that have also passed the same type of resolution. So as was mentioned, our school board members have gravitated towards this issue. They feel really strongly about it. And the reason I think that we feel really strongly about it is because we don't want to make the mistakes of the past. I think once you listen to the testimony of the DNR, and I could give you a laundry list of things that have happened in the past that are actually in breach of trust. And we just want to create the position with enough autonomy to ensure that these mistakes don't get made year after year. And we have no doubts that this commissioner is doing some things right and making some changes in the DNR, but we don't know who's going to be in that position 50 years from now. And so we are trying to make systemic change for the long term that ensures that the school children of this state have one trustee with undivided loyalty in the Department of Administration, which is funded out of school trust lands money and would be in alignment to laws that have been passed and that are on the books. So with that, Madam Chair, I think that I will stop my testimony and answer any questions people might have.
Thank you very much, former Representative Dietrich, and I just again want to compliment you for the very purposeful and tenacious manner in which you pursued this issue in the legislature, and see that it's continuing in your new role. But and I know you have a question, Representative Anzels, but at this time I did ask before we started, we do have a representative from the Department of Administration with us, and if that gentleman would like to come down. And is there a representative from the governor's office here? I wasn't aware of one when I came in, but wanted to offer up that opportunity if one is here. Thank you. And if you would state your name for the record and that, and maybe just enlighten the committee, and thank you for rejoining the table, Commissioner, and obviously you represent the governor. With regards to the comments that were made, and I wasn't aware, Representative O'Driscoll mentioned that the governor had made a statement about waiting until after the most recent election to perhaps make a selection for this position within Department of Administration. If you could maybe share with us where we are in this process as you know it today.
Madam Chair, thank you for that. I'd be happy to answer that question. I think Representative Dietrich outlined some of the timeline there, and I'll reiterate that the authority was provided in 12, the funding was provided in 14. The governor concluded it would be better for a new governor, if there were one, to make the appointment in January. January is here. We are proceeding to make the proceeding with the process. I'll offer from the standpoint of the perspective, the department does not have any authority under that legislation to do anything. I think there was a deliberate attempt, as Representative Dietrich said, to keep the department away from this. The authority is invested in the governor to make the appointment, in administration to house the person, but there's some sort of major questions we're trying to answer, like right now. For instance, who does this person report to? You know, who's going to sign their timesheet? Who's going to make sure there's financial controls in place? Who provides legal support? It's a very unique state office that's created here with that kind of division of accountabilities, and so we're wrestling with some of that right now, quite frankly, and that's what we collectively as an administration are hoping to resolve and proceed with the hiring and the appointment.
Thank you, Commissioner. If you'd like to introduce yourself for the record, thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Matt Scheer. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Administration. And sort of where I'm aware of where we're at the moment, I know that currently we're working with the DNR to assist us in developing sort of a position description and a job posting for this position. And part of the need for that is, one of the challenges, admin's role often doesn't kind of go toward forest products or mineral apparatus. So we have some technical expertise that we're utilizing through the department to help us develop sort of that position description as we move forward. But beyond that, I know admin in the statute, particularly 127.353, we're tasked with providing a physical office space and support for the position, and we plan to do that. Beyond that, I know that from conversations other folks in the department have had with sort of interested parties, we know that physical separation from the DNR is desired, and it is our hope that we'd be able to provide that person office space in either the administration building or the Centennial office building. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those as well.
Thank you, Mr. Scheer. And just do you have any potential timeline that you could provide to the committee on when some of these steps will be moving forward and we may see some progress on this?
I know that at least quoted in the news, Madam Chair and committee members, we've heard that January was the hope. And I think part of that, from what my understanding is, part of that timeline was based on somebody that we thought might be interested in the position. And at this point, I think that we are not clear that we have an internal candidate, and we probably have to put it up for public recruitment. And we're developing that position description, and hopefully we'll be able to have. It'll probably take a couple months to find a position. You know, one of the challenges with this position is we need somebody who has financial background, knowledge in forest management, minerals, fiduciary responsibility. So there's a lot of skills necessary for this position.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anzels, you've been waiting. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for former Representative Dietrich. Thank you for your work and your presentation. Everybody here understands the goal and supports the goal of generating more dollars for kids off school trust fund land. With regard specifically to the DNR, how do you reconcile the goal with the day-to-day functions that the DNR has to perform in order that your outcome gets met? Specifically, how do you, where do you see the DNR's water regulatory function? Where do you see the DNR's permitting function? Where do you see the DNR's management of school trust fund land, forestry lands, in a sustainable way? How do you see these functions, first of all, being performed by somebody, and secondly, how can we as policymakers be assured that these functions are going to be performed with a revenue generation outcome in mind, so that you meet the expectations of what your efforts have been about. And lastly, just an editorial comment, this feels like another layer of bureaucracy to this member.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Van Zels. First, I would just like to comment, people attribute my energy to this issue as wanting to get more money for schools, and actually that's not true. What I want to see is to make sure that we have honored our trust obligations. We have the school children of this state own a trust fund. They have 2.5 million acres of assets, and I feel like in the past we have taken actions that do not honor our trust obligations. And that has been demonstrated in other states that have some of the same issues, and they have actually had lawsuits over this, and actually where the school children of the state have prevailed. I could go through a laundry list of things that because we don't, so mine is more in the organization. I want one person looking over the trust every day of the year on behalf of the school children. Let me just give one small example. People are usually very surprised when they realize that we have a trust fund and that the interest and dividends get sent to the school districts. But up until 2010, we then used to subtract that money. We'd give them their trust money, and then we'd subtract it as a state. Now, I feel like if we had an authentic, real trustee working on behalf of the school children and who could stand up on behalf of the school children, that would have never happened. That there would have been somebody watching this and shouting from the rooftop when you have a breach of trust like that. And there are examples and examples. For another example is the fire suppression that Representative Quam brought up. We have legislatively said that in forestry, and actually constitutionally, that the DNR can subtract their expenses for forestry because it's a high expense business. And so we as the legislature at one point said you could subtract fire suppression. Lo and behold, as we have pored over these documents for years and tried to dissect this, are we really honoring our trust obligations? Lo and behold, we get charged for fire suppression, and there is no other entity in the state that gets charged for fire suppression, public or private. So that is, so if there was, and you know, it was when those topics, that topic would be brought up, the DNR would come to the table and they'd say, you're right, that is right, that probably shouldn't be. And so I would say in my office in a meeting, so why don't you change that? They'd respond back, because the legislature says we can. So there is no one person watching the policy, the way that the finances go on behalf of the children day to day. Another issue that you talk about, that this is another layer of bureaucracy, I will say that it will add some streamlined focus. And for the example that I would give is the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Land Exchange. That has 86,000 acres of school trust lands in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area that is not generating any money, and that is in breach of trust. And so, but that has been going on for 30 years. And so I think having somebody with focused attention working on behalf of the children day in and day out and the ability to hire some staff to get a return on the investment could actually make that exchange or that sale, whichever the preferences of those stakeholders, possible. Other states have made it happen in their states, but we have not. And I will say it is because of a bureaucracy managing our lands right now.
Representative Mansells, did you have? I have two other members, and I want to honor their questions before we adjourn.
Thank you very much. In the short term, do you believe that we can allow the forest to burn down, and that is a acceptable outcome in the extreme, without taking measures to provide for fire suppression which will minimize the loss to the school children. What's your reaction to that?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My reaction to that is that, no, it is the DNR's role to protect the state in the case of forest fires and do proactive protection. But I don't think that the school children of this state should be the only one charged for their own fire suppression. And if you read the legislative audit report of 1998, the legislative audit report even criticizes the formula the DNR uses in order to charge the school trust lands fire suppression. That it is not a good way to, it isn't even an accurate way of charging. And so that was one modification at one point when we started dissecting some of this stuff. And then as you look further, you have to ask yourself, should the children of this state be the only ones charged for fire suppression when other private and public entities are not charged for fire suppression, and yet the DNR does protect their land?
Well, we've gone through 10 years of severe budget cutting around here, and the DNR was faced with a very difficult decision.
All right,
members. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and I'm going to ask all members to go through the chair. I'm going to give Representative Murphy a minute, and then Representative Quam a minute. If we can keep this brief, we are already at our appointed hour, and the next committee will come in. So, Representative Murphy, Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, the only comment I had was the magnitude of this increase was $1 per student. The total payment is $30 per student, so when you might think we're talking trivialities, but it's a good portion of what the kids get.
Thank you, Representative Kwan. That's a good measure by which to understand this. All right, members, I want to thank you and our testifiers for a good discussion, and I understand there may some with questions yet on the wisdom of having a separate person in the Department of Administration, but the legislature has acted, is in statute, and so just to our testifiers, the commissioner and the Department of Administration, we will be watching for action on this to move this to completion of the legislature's intent and the statute and the laws of Minnesota. So with that, I want to thank all the members and the testifiers today, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.